case is 98378 Cincinnati Bar Association versus Lauren Haas. Mr. Berlich.
I have reserved 3 minutes, my bad. Your Honor, I'm going to start out with this. I take a pre-construction hearing to the council in Portland, and I take the Ohio Rules of Civil Procedure in Portland. This is not a take, a trial by occupant, which is what the court has been going through thus far. We spent over $10,000 in discovery on audio tapes of these cases. Many were excluded because our expert was in Minnesota and detected a number of anomalies. My client, in this case, we filed discovery requests. We had order from the panel that the relator would disclose the witnesses to us at an offer at the hearing by July 17th. They did not, and then represented to us that they were not going to call Ms. Maurice St. Paul. That witness had not been believed by any court which she had testified in front of previously. The court of comments, please.
Let me back up.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you alleging that this tape is fabricated and this tape is false?
The Niagara tape? No, I am not.
So you're not, the tape that I was quoting from, you're not claiming that tape was fabricated or edited or false?
No, I am not. That tape was one that we did have examined and we agreed.
That's all I'm looking at. Like, I'm not looking at anything else that they call said. I'm not looking at anything. I look just at that.
I understand.
That's all you need.
I understand. But we do, I think, have the right to rely on the rules of civil procedure. And when the panel tells a relator, you must disclose by June 17th witnesses you're going to call. We disclosed 25 witnesses who we were going to call to attack the tape that you actually heard, the reasons why it was offered, the reasons why it's out of context. And when relator says, we are not going to call Maurice St. Paul. I appear a witness list down from 25 to 8. At the hearing, the relator completes his case, does not call that witness. I excuse 3 of my other witnesses, take the case out of order, then the panel calls this witness. I have not deposed, done no discovery on. She has a finding from the Court of Common Pleas. While this matter was pending, she told Judge Gaines in the Domestic Relations Court, the judge, I can't provide you with the documents in this matter because the Cincinnati Bar Association has one. The Supreme Court of Ohio.
Counsel, let me get you back. Let's say we agree with you and we say St. Paul should never be allowed to testify. We will completely exclude her testimony. How do you get around your client's words in the tape? Not St. Paul, your client's words in the tape. What would you have done to explain your client saying you could be found, you could lie, you could make this all up? How do you get around that?
Well,
that are your client's words, not St. Paul's words.
There are a couple things. This is a difficulty. This is a piece of this puzzle that we're focusing on that now becomes the case. But after that piece, I would tell you this. There's a famous controversy going on in Washington called Talking Points. This witness on that page that you had, that hired a private investigator, had outlined the elements of obstruction of justice and decided to surreptitiously tape and was directing all along this conversation. My client had more information than Deirdre had. She knew from talking to her client who was charged with original domestic violence that Ms. St. Paul was under the influence.
Are you now saying entrapment then? She entrapped him into telling him that she ought to lie? Is that her opinion?
No, I did not use the words entrapment. You asked me how I explained that statement, and this is what I would do. You don't permit lawyers to do surreptitious tapes, even if they're accurate, because it's such an overwhelming disadvantage, and you can misconstrue what is going on, that the tape does not necessarily reflect what it purports to reflect, even though the words are there. My client was trying to appease St. Paul, trying to get her through. On the one hand, this is a prosecuting witness who calls her, writes her a check for $2,000, tells her that all this didn't happen. She's bringing in a new colleague who's not up to speed, Mr. Deardorff. This case is much more than words on that tape.
What did your client plead guilty to? Obstruction?
Yes, she pled guilty to a pretend offense called attempted obstruction with the agreement that she would get a fine and would not, and that would be the end of it. I think it was a poor decision, but...
What was the basis for the charge against her for obstruction against her? What were the facts?
Well, there was really none laid out. I didn't try the case, but it was charged as attempted obstruction. Under obstruction, the attempt is an obstruction. It was a compromised offense.
I know, but what were the predicate facts that were given as the reason why they charged her?
Your Honor, I would have to go back and look at the agreements ahead of time. I did not represent her in a criminal matter. And what happened was there was an agreement to a plea with a result between the prosecutor, who was also a certified member of the grievance committee, and the judge, and they agreed that if she pled guilty to attempt, she would get a fine, the probation would be over.
But she did plead guilty.
She did plead guilty.
The board found that Haas endured her for charge of obstructing justice arising out of the telephone call of May 19th and the meeting of May 23rd with Ms. St. Paul. So it clearly arose out of this incident.
Oh, yeah.
It
was facts arising out of this incident, but the specific facts constitute the offense of attempted obstruction. I don't think they're that clearly laid out. It was a plea bargain, and the circumstances surrounding all this, my client did enter a plea. They dismissed the charge as to Mr. Deardorff, and the matter proceeded from there. And my client, and one of the things I think strong objection to, Your Honor, we talked about this affidavit. What happened is we asked for discovery forever. They never gave us any. We gave them an exhibit. It's in the notebook with my co-counsel, Bradley Ottes now. It has over 100 items in it. One of them was a complete file, including this purported affidavit that was never filed, never presented to the witness for signature, never used in any way. Relator argues that my client, number one, counseled this person to leave the jurisdiction. They then say that she wanted her to testify false. They then want to say that she was going to give immunity, and they then want to say that there was going to be a hearing where this affidavit was entered. On its face, that cannot be true. All those things can't happen. If a judge has fixed the case, you don't have to leave the jurisdiction. If you leave the jurisdiction, you don't fix the case. These tapes are not accurate as to what happened. But importantly, and I do think the question that must be answered is, am I as an attorney, under your rules, allowed to rely on the representation of co-counsel, and when the panel gives an order that you must disclose the witnesses who are going to testify by June 17th, and the response to me is, we're not going to call Lori St. Paul. Is it then fair to have trial by ambush where I walk in and then the panel calls this witness? Courts can certainly ask questions, but they cannot ask questions that the lawyers cannot ask. I'm sitting there with the witness where there is this. Finding that she's untruthful, finding that she's a perjurer, finding that there's been a judgment against her before the actions against the proper defendant in this case. It arose out of, and you read the facts, Mr. Wilson supposedly threw a Ouija board at her. And that was the domestic violence case, and your contact is pushing her out of the bedroom.
I've had a hard time understanding how St. Paul's lack of credibility, as you claim, was outright one.
Before she came into the office.
Affects the words your client spoke.
Before this
conversation, and the words on that tape. I said in my brief, and I would say again to the court, you're right, tapes don't lie, but liars tape. When I had the identity, the lifeblood of my client at this hearing, it was not a one count for the tapes, it was for a body of evidence and the primary witness. I cannot depose after spending well over $10,000 on collateral witnesses, And only when the panel says, look, because I want to know what they get in that tape, which is why I wanted, that was my reason for...
Did you listen to the tape?
Oh, yes, I listened to all the tape. But once the panel says, once my opposing counsel tells me, that person will not testify, after I excuse all of my witnesses, after you don't even address what she raises, and then the arguments here, and the ones are being made to you, look at the brief that we later suggested. Look at all the adjectives in it. Mrs. St. Paul said, she thought, she was the... They are offering her testimony on the merits, not that tape. And regardless, I think as an attorney licensed, listening to your instructions and the rules of civil procedure, that I have absolute right to believe that the rules of civil procedure will be enforced.
Counsel,
even lawyers, when having excuses witnesses, then the rules of the trial change at the hearing.
Counsel, I guess I can understand your frustration with what you take place. If we agree that you were properly respect to what's the appropriate way for us to handle that? Does that necessarily mean that your client's disapprobation should be dismissed?
No, it does not.
What is the appropriate way to address those issues?
Certainly the one issue. My client did plead guilty to the attempted obstruction regardless of what happens. I know the 4-second look behind facts, as a matter of fact, we have to deal with. So I do say that court should issue a disciplinary order on that particular violation. But as to the other part of it, I mean, my client did not get a fair hearing. She did not get due process of law. I think all those other counts ought to be excluded. See, we're searching up here for peace, obviously damning audio tape. If it were not, we would not be focused on it, which is all the more reason why it hurt us to be misled of this witness. What I
counsel,
think you should do,
may I ask you the concept that, and it does sound, it's never a good thing to hear about someone playing games in discovery. It sounds like that's what you say went on here. But lawyers usually prepare for that sort of thing by calling the witness in their own case if it's critical. I'm just wondering why, if Ms. St. Paul were critical to your defense here, that you didn't ensure that she testified in your case.
I'm glad that you asked that question. If you look at Kevin 7, as an officer of this court, when I offer a witness to a court or a tribunal, if that witness is a known perjurer, is known that it is not truthful, I violate the canons. Now, these are not my words. You have a journal entry from the Court of Common Pleas, Judge Cunningham,
reciting
this witness's untruthfulness.
And so, in like manner, then, it would be the same constraint would exist for the Bar Association not to present her. Is that right?
I had great concern as to how this witness could be offered as a truthful person. Maybe they will, but I think we later ask them.
But yet you're telling us that you were, in a sense, sandbagged by the expectation that the Bar Association would offer Ms. St. Paul, isn't that?
I was sandbagged because they told me she would not be offered. I therefore
dismissed,
collaborative discovery, did not prepare to depose her.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to be there.
Right.
12 hours before the hearing, said she's going to be available. I'm not that good.
Mm-hmm. And she did then testify.
She appeared to testify to me.
Okay.
I see that my light is blinking. As a sanction, one thing I would like to offer to the court, that from the very beginning, my client has been totally upfront and cooperative with the Bar Association. Whatever happens. I do not think, and it was particularly because we later suggest that these witnesses did not know what the allegations were. There's a long letter by Alan Brown, which is important. So I was so shocked with these allegations that I went back, reviewed the complaint, reviewed people who were involved, talked to them. I was thoroughly aware of what the allegations were, and his opinion was the same. That's
You didn't get a chance to finish your answer to Justice Pfeiffer. He said, what do you think should happen?
I think my client should be disciplined for the pleading guilty to the attempted obstruction. Although when you look at the facts, you look at Green, you look at the case, the Alaska case.
Yeah. Let's not do that.
I would think
for the obstruction, and what kind of a penalty?
I think that a 6-month suspension or 1-year suspension would be perfectly appropriate. The other thing, we all can see, my client was so devastated when this happened, she closed her practice, does not practice law.
Yep. I read that fact. You say a 1-year suspension might be appropriate. Didn't the board say 2 years with 1 year stayed?
That is correct.
So it becomes 1 year.
That is correct. And Your Honor, I would say one other thing. If there is a message that we would like to send to practicing lawyers, there are both laws men, in this case for my client, certainly I would counsel them differently. One thing I would not counsel differently is be cooperative. Admit your errors. Stop practicing law. She has done a great service, I think, to the court and the profession by dealing with this the way she has. And those are positions on the people who wrote for her. They were prosecutors, the people who dealt with her on an everyday basis.
Counsel, I have one question. I'm curious. Did the check bounce before or after this taped conversation?
I don't know the timing. I mean, it was deposited in the firm's account, but I don't know if it was before or after. But it
really, I thought there was a suggestion someplace I read that your client had left the state. Is that not right?
No, her husband has left for a job opportunity in the state of Minnesota. She has gone to operate another business in the Ohio. She attended Haven, probably attends to move to Minnesota.
She's
to
the first place.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. DeMarco.
Suggestions made that Relator had withheld evidence during discovery. I just wanted to put those to rest. They presented interrogatories and answered them in full. They presented requests for production of documents and tapes. We responded in full. The suggestion has been made that there was unfair surprise in the calling of this witness, Nori St. Paul. Prior to the hearing, the day before the hearing, and we lay this out in our brief, so I'll just recount it briefly. We had sent a letter to the other side saying that we still do not intend to call Ms. St. Paul as a witness because, as Justice Stratton has pointed out, we believe the tape speaks for itself. But we said we have got her assurance that she will come to the hearing. And in fact, she did show up at 8:30 that morning. That hearing ended up at 10 o'clock at night. She sat there until she was called around 6 p.m. And she was called by the board. There was no unfair surprise. The end of our letter from the day before said, we are telling you this, quote, so you can plan accordingly.
Is there a copy of that letter in the record?
No, Your Honor. I would be happy to provide the court with that. This is the first time that they have raised a suggestion on appeal that there was something wrong. Actually, they addressed the matter to the...
Well, it was in their brief.
Yes, in their brief. They addressed the matter to the panel chair of unfair surprise, and the panel chair made a finding that both sides had equal access to this witness for deposition purposes and for purposes of calling her at trial, and that there would be no undue advantage to calling her as a witness of the board.
Without
there was nothing improper done in that regard.
Without her appearing at the hearing, how do you get the tape into evidence? Who authenticates it?
Your Honor,
the foundation.
The May 23rd tape. First of all, both tapes were stipulated to as to accuracy, so the transcripts were already prepared. They had been sent to the board members pursuant to stipulation so the board members could listen to them. Then at the hearing, we called Lieutenant Kurt Berg from the fraud unit of the Cincinnati Police Division, and he authenticated the tape that we're talking about of May 23rd. He also said that he had heard, that I believe, the tape of May 19th, which is what caused him to make the decision to wire the witness on May 23rd. So she wasn't even necessary to authenticate the tape. I think there were other witnesses along the way who identified the voices on the tape. So she would not have been necessary. We took the position she would not have been necessary even to authenticate the tape, which is why we were not calling her as a witness. Let me get back to this idea of why she came to be called, though. If you look at the early parts of the day, Mr. Berlew made the issue of her credibility. He did it all day long. He thought he was dealing with an empty chair, but the board, in essence, called his bluff. He spent the whole day saying, this is a person who's completely unbelievable. She's been adjudicated to be a liar. You shouldn't believe anything she says. Well, he piqued their curiosity. They called her as a witness. Remains to be seen, and the court can make a judgment as to how important her testimony was. I don't believe it was as important, nearly as important as the tape.
You say that, did I understand you, though, that you notified the other side about her presence in a letter the day before?
Yeah, what happened was on the...
That's not quite enough time for much preparation. Did you know farther in advance than that?
No. What happened, Your Honor, we had a pager number for Ms. St. Paul, and she testified that she had turned the pager off. She had deactivated it without giving us a new number where we could reach her, so we didn't know where to reach her. About a week before, there was a deposition of Ms. Helmick, who was one of Ms. Haas's witnesses and very close to their litigation team. She said, well, do you know where Nori St. Paul is? And I said, no, tell me. And she said, I believe she's living in a halfway house or a homeless shelter called Bethany House. Well, Bethany House is a homeless shelter that will not tell you who lives there, but you can leave messages. So they raised the issue with the panel chair at a conference on the 24th. They said, we, Relator, are hiding this witness. And I said to the panel chair, we still do not intend to call this witness. They have been in touch with their witness for a year who has been litigating with Ms. St. Paul. They know where Ms. St. Paul is better than I do. And the panel chair said, would you please try to find Ms. St. Paul? So what I did, I called Bethany House, the homeless shelter, and I left a message. I realized that they wouldn't tell me if she lived there or not. In fact, they said that's confidential.
You didn't tell the counsel, Mr. Berlew, at that time that you knew about Bethany House. Wouldn't that have seemed like a good idea?
Oh, he was at the deposition with me when Bethany...
He heard that.
Yes, he heard that, too. When Bethany House was disclosed as the homeless shelter through which she dealt. So I left a message at Bethany House, and Ms. St. Paul called me back, and I wrote the letter, and I said, when I talked to her, you have to promise me you will come to the hearing. I wrote the letter to them, or actually my co-counsel, Mr. Slauson, wrote the letter to them in my absence and said she will be at the hearing. And as I said, he ended his letter so that you can plan accordingly. There were no games being played. This was a witness that we did not intend to call, but at the request of the panel chair, we did what we could to find her. We found her. She sat there for 8 hours before being called. During the entire 8 hours, they attacked her credibility. They shouldn't be able to claim unfair surprise that the panel would want to hear whether she was credible or the ogre that they claimed her to be. There were questions, I think Justice Stratton raised questions as to the basis of the attempted obstruction of justice, and I just wanted to read from 29.1.32 of the Ohio Revised Code, that no person with a purpose to hinder the, I'm skipping here, prosecution for a crime shall do any of the following, and it includes in subsection 4, destroy or conceal physical evidence of the crime, or induce any person to withhold testimony or information, or to elude legal process summoning him to testify or supply evidence. The journalization of her guilty plea is part of the record. and she did not contest it at the hearing, so it was a factual basis for the charge and for her guilty plea.
Counsel, before you leave this whole issue, this woman's testimony, would be a fair statement.
Are you going to go through with all five hearings?
The Bar Association left to
see how far they
could respond.
We were absolutely clear. We had no intention of calling
at 12:15.
So, what is it that put in on notice she might be?
The fact that the evidence, that Evidence Rule 614, I believe, provides that the court can call any witness it chooses, and it also lays out how the parties then are entitled to examine that witness. This court's case law,
you would agree, you have the same, that both sides have a problem calling her because of her reputation.
Well, I would agree she was a completely unprepared witness for both sides. Neither side could tell in advance what she was going to say. And in fact, the panel examined her first. We were all cross-examining her. We were all, as the panel said, at the same disadvantage.
It strikes me that you, by this process you went through, just put some irresistible bait out there in front of the panel. You see to it that she's there, and who among us, after setting for a day of this, could resist leading her in there to testify?
Mrs. Piper, I think that could have been resisted. Certainly we resisted it throughout our case, because we took the position consistently the tape speaks for itself. Ms. Haas' attorney chose a different tack, and I think he bears responsibility for opening that door. He said, don't listen to what's on the tape. Listen to us when we tell you this woman is a liar. And so, to the extent it was irresistible for them to hear this woman and judge her credibility.
So once they know she's sitting there in the wings, That's a course of action that was a high risk course of defense in that case.
That was very high risk for them to open the door with the panel chair having said to us, well, get her there. Get her to that hearing. And we got her to that hearing, and we let them know she'd be at that hearing. So for 8 hours, they badgered the panel with versions of her credibility. They called witnesses who testified that she was incredible. They called a witness who testified that until she met Nori St. Paul, she thought people were basically good. Well, with that sort of testimony being presented by them, I don't think it's surprising to anybody that the panel decided to hear from this person who was less than 40 feet away. I think that was human nature. The panel did exactly as it should, exactly as this court's cases say it can, and it even handled the parties' respective examinations of her properly, permitting all sides to treat her as a potentially adverse witness. So, in summation, I was glad to hear Mr. Berlew acknowledged that his client had pled guilty. I would just add to that that the record shows, and the testimony shows, she pled guilty knowing she knew exactly what she was doing. She wasn't under any duress. So that violation alone justifies the 2 years that the panel had suggested. Now, again, we argue in our brief that peeling it back to 1 year should only be done with some justification. The panel mentions in its findings some suggestions she was remorseful. Your Honors, I have never been through a disciplinary case that was as hard-fought as this one. If you look at the transcript, she says very clearly to the panel, I think we did not commit any disciplinary violations. I think what we said on May 23rd was ethical. That is not remorse. That is not an expression of remorse. That is not even a hint of remorse. I think the entire 2 years that the panel originally settled on, without peeling it back to a year, is appropriate. And I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. DeMarco. Mr. Erlew, you've used your time. Can I take 30 seconds?
Yes, just for my own personal integrity, Your Honor, I plead guilty to believing lawyers when they tell me something, and I plead guilty to adhering to the rules of civil procedure. And you're right, that hurt my client, which is why this ought to be just remanded and tossed out.
Counsel?
Yes.
You keep going back to St. Paul. I'd like to read you one quote from the president and ask you to explain it to me. This is your client, Father, right? Let me ask you something, this is Todd speaking. I just thought of something. Had you been drinking, St. Paul? No, he was. Ms. Todd, you didn't even have a beer, Ms. Paul. Not one, not even a sip. I could. Ms. Todd, well, I was going to say, what if we said, the other thing we could do is say that you have been drinking, St. Paul, right? Both of you. I mean, we could say both of you have been drinking. St. Paul, right. She goes on. How do you explain that?
Two things. Number one, this St. Paul had been drinking. If you look at the testimony of Mr. Wilson, prior to she's been in substance abuse programs, development recovery programs, and that's part of the problem. Ms. Haas knew a lot about Lori St. Paul and her drinking.
So even though she denies she's drinking here,
St. Paul was.
St. Paul.
Ms. Haas knew she was.
So she's got this outside knowledge that she's going to tell her, say you were drinking anyway?
No, her client, she represented Carla Wilson, that was her client. When he described what happened with domestic violence, Nori was drinking again. He's a tenured professor, no blemish. She's in recovery programs, and if you look at the transcript throughout the proceeding, that is clear. And this idea about the empty chair, Mike Kelly is exactly right. I could have sat down with a mushroom and let that panel believe that Nori St. Paul was correct. They could have provided me the courtesy of telling me that she would be a witness. Maybe it's coincidence, but when the panel chair tells you, look, if you don't have that witness there to authenticate that tape, we're not going to use her. A day later, whoops, we find her. She testifies, and I talked to Mr. DeMarco 3 or 4 days before the hearing. Excuse me, I don't think that my client got a fair trial. Due process. When you look at Ruffalo, and you talk about lawyers' due process, if they wanted to do that, the panel's procedure is Mr. Berlew, we want to call this witness, we'll take a continuous in progress, and let you depose them. I cannot argue this case piece by piece, soundbite by soundbite. All I can tell you was, I believe your rules, I believe my opponent, when they represented to me that a witness would not be called, and they popped up a witness that they talked about all day, said, here she is, we're not going to call her.
You've used your time,
and she was called, and my client suffered because of that, and don't think that is the type of hearing that you want attorneys to have.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.